Adam, what changed for the Preds for them to kind of get back to maybe being a team that many people thought they should be earlier in the season?
Well, a couple of things. The first thing that stands out, of course, is the play of UC Saros. He returned from injury on March 18th. He had missed about 2 weeks with an injury. And since that date, he's won 16 of his 23 starts with a 1.9 goals against and .941 save percentage. So as we all know, goaltending can make or break a team. So that certainly has helped. And the second thing outside of the goaltending is that the Predators, for the first time in a couple of years, have found an identity. Even when the team was performing better in the regular season, winning the President's Trophy during the 17-18 season, winning the Central Division in the 18-19 season, they didn't really have an identity. You never knew what you were going to get from them on a night-to-night basis. And they had the talent to win despite that. But I think that John Hines, from the beginning of his time here, recognized that this team needed to find the right way to play in his mind. And that was a physical team with an emphasis on a strong forecheck, capitalizing on other teams' mistakes, counterattacking, and scoring that way. And it was a laborious process, but around mid-season is when it finally seemed to take hold. And as you said, the Predators 11-16-1 at the end of their first half of the season, which was, I believe, 26th in the NHL, 27-1 in the second half of the season, one of the top five teams in the league by number of points. So those two things hand in hand helped the Predators get back to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And, let's talk a little bit more about UC Saros. You know, there are some people who suggest that, small goalies are no longer welcome in the NHL. He's a little bit undersized. But what specifically do you see about this year from him that he's kind of just taken to what, so far has been an amazing level?
Well, I think part of it is just getting more reps. He's been in the league now for 4 or 5 years, but last season was his first opportunity, at least the second half of the season before the pause, was his first opportunity to really be a full-time starter. He started all 4 games in the Edmonton bubble in the qualifying round. But I think that experience has helped. Also, the thing about UC Saros is even before this season, you mentioned, he is an outlier among goaltenders. He's listed at 5'11". I believe that might be generous, as we all know. Those numbers tend to get inflated when teams are doing doing height and weight. He might be 5'11 on skates, as we like to say. But he was always one of the better goaltenders, I should say, in terms of his positioning. Because he was a smaller goalie, he had to have above average positioning, above average lateral movement. And I feel like he continued to do that this year, perhaps made some tweaks to his stance to allow him to better read and react. I believe there are only 2 other regular goalies in the NHL who are under 6 feet, Anton Khudobin and Yaroslav Halak, if I'm not mistaken. So I do think that the height thing is a bit overblown, but UC Saros, I feel like, became even better. He was already strong in terms of his positioning and squaring up the shooters. I feel like he got even better this year.
Adam Bingen joins us. Adam, when you look at Nashville, it's hard for a lot of people to get past the salary cap situation, specifically of some underperforming forwards in Nashville. And, you look at Matt Duchene and you see $8 million. You look at Ryan Johansson and you see $8 million. And, I can only imagine what it's like covering that team amongst for you having to read from Predator fans. Because, have either one of those guys emerged and showed you, signs that they're close to being as valuable as their contract?
Yeah, that's a good question. And a lot of Predators fans are trying to plot a way for the Seattle Kraken to end up with one of those 2 players in the expansion draft. A lot of armchair GMing happening in the Predators fan base. I mean, they beat the Hurricanes 5-0 in their regular season finale. It was basically a preseason game. A lot of regulars were held out of the lineup for both teams. But Matthew Shane scored twice. Ryan Johansson scored once. You hope that that could help them moving forward. But you're right. You know, the Predators do have a lot of money tied up in them, $8 million apiece. And based on that alone, neither of them were performing up to their contracts this season. You know, we figured with Matt Duchene specifically that the season he had in his contract year, when he had 70 points and he had 31 goals, he shot 18%, which is a career high. You know, it felt like the pendulum swung in a completely opposite direction this season. You know, I think at the time he was injured in early March, he had a shooting percentage of around 5%. But he was doing a lot of the right things, but he wasn't being able to finish. With Johansson, you know, I'm a more well-rounded player than Duchene in terms of his ability to play defensive hockey. But you know, he's had 50 assist seasons in Nashville. He struggled last season, struggled this season in terms of putting up points. So, you know, I've had people in the league tell me that they're skeptical of a team that's led by those two up front in terms of being their top six centers for the most part. Duchene's actually been playing third wing on the third line recently. Mikael Granlundson been at second line center. But with those two players being their highest paid forwards, you know, people aren't sure how far the Predators can go. And that remains a question.
So, you know, other than UC Soros literally building a brick wall in front of his net, what has to go really right, in your opinion, for the Nashville in their first round playoff series this week?
Well, I think we all know, actually, that the Predators aren't going to outskill the Carolina Hurricanes. And what's interesting is that in most series, the Predators have a distinct advantage on defense. You know, it's hard to find three top defensemen that are better or equal to Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, and Ryan Ellis. The Hurricanes have that. You know, they have Dougie Hamilton, they have Jacob Slavin, they have Brett Pesce. You know, so that advantage has been sort of neutralized. You know, I think the one thing that the Predators can do to at least make this series competitive is ramp up the physicality. I feel like that's the one area where the Predators, especially with this new identity I was referencing, you know, can batter the Hurricanes. Because if it becomes a shootout, you know, of course there are no shootouts in the playoffs, but you know what I mean. If it becomes a shootout on the ice.
Right.
The Hurricanes are going to win. The Predators just don't have the proverbial horses up front like the Hurricanes do in Aho and Svechnikov and Trocheck and Staal, among others. So I think the Predators have to play stout defense in front of UC Soros and also ratchet up the physicality and basically beat up the Hurricanes if they want to stand a chance.
The special teams of the Predators, they're terrible, both the power play and the penalty kill. How come?
Well, the penalty kill got off to a terrible start. Early in the season, they were the opponents for the Stars in their first two games of the season after their season was delayed. And I believe they allowed 7 power play goals or 8 power play goals those two games. So they dug themselves a deep hole. It's gotten a lot better over time, but they were so bad at the beginning that even as they improved mightily over the course of the season, they were still really bad. You know, the power play has been a problem here for a few years, but you know, the 5-man unit of Roman Josi, Ryan Johansson, Mikael Granlund, Ellie Tolvanen, and Philip Forsberg has been one of the better in the league in terms of goals per 20 minutes on the power play. You know, mostly because they have Ellie Tolvanen in the left circle, Philip Forsberg in the right circle, and you have that dual threat. So if the penalty killers cheat to one of them, the other one's going to be wide open. The percentages are bad, but they've been a bit misleading based on how well the Predators have played on special teams as they've resuscitated their season. You know, the Hurricanes, on the other hand, I believe are top three in both special teams units. So, you know, they have a distinct advantage there as well.
Lastly, you know, you've seen that division. Carolina's the favorite for sure. Who do you like in the Tampa-Florida series, and how much does Kucherov returning alter things?
Yeah, that's a good question, because the Lightning seem to stumble down the stretch. The Panthers, you know, have been a surprise in the Central Division. I expected them at the beginning of the season to be on the bubble. I didn't think they would be, you know, a second place team, you know, but they're very, very good. The one thing that gives me pause about the Panthers is their goaltending, especially Sergei Bobrovsky, who has proven, of course, he's a Vezina Trophy winner, but, you know, can have these stretches of below average play. You know, I'll be curious if, you know, Chris Drieger starts or if Bobrovsky starts and struggles if Chris Drieger comes in. You know, I look at the Lightning, you know, Kucherov returning, Stamkos presumably being healthy. You know, Hedman, I believe, was hurt down the stretch. If he's back to normal, I have a hard time picking against the Lightning. I think that series is going to be so much fun. We saw the final regular season games between the two teams. I think there was a suspension and two fines that were dispensed as a result of those two games. So the teams clearly despise each other. I think it's a coin flip, but I would give it to the Lightning just based on the players coming back into the lineup and their experience relative to the Panthers in the playoffs.
Adam, always great to catch up with you, man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the series. And do you have an update on how many fans will be in the stands for the Preds games?
Yes. Yes, the Predators have increased capacity to roughly 70% of Bridgestone Arena. So they say 12,135 fans will be in attendance for their home playoff game.
12,100. Well, okay. Well, that could be. That's obviously going to be a big advantage. But honestly, I think it's almost exciting for both teams because just to hear fans in the building, I think that'll be a boost for a lot of teams, regardless of where they're playing.
Yeah, and I don't know what the Hurricanes are doing exactly. I think they're going to have a few thousand. As far as I know, the Predators are the only team that plan to have five figures worth of fans in the stands. I think everybody else is in the four-digit realm. But, yeah, the atmosphere for the last few Predators games, there were roughly 7,000 fans in attendance. It was great. It was loud. So having 12,000 should be pretty cool, especially considering everything we've gone through this year.
And quickly, give me your thoughts on rookie Tanner Jeannot. 5 goals in 15 games since being recalled from the AHL.
Yeah, the pride of Oxbow, Saskatchewan. Esteban, Saskatchewan. I actually talked to his parents a couple weeks ago, and they told me that Oxbow is so small that they don't have a hospital where babies can be delivered. So that's why he is listed from Esteban, Saskatchewan, despite growing up in Oxbow. But he's been fabulous. I mean, he really fits in on that fourth line with Jakob Trenin and Colton Sissons. They call it the herd line around here because you have the Yak, the Colt, and the Ox. They've been the best line for the Predators over the past couple of months.
Someone spent a lot of time with Tootsie's coming up with that name, eh?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Adam, thanks for this. We appreciate it.
Yes, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.